Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and in this segment we're going to be taking a look at an organization which has generally been viewed as fictitious, but which is not only real, but which has exerted a profound, although generally unrecognized, influence on the post-World War II world. That organization is the ODESA, which is an acronym for the German for the post-World War II SS Underground. This organization has been largely publicized as a result of the Frederick Forsyth novel, The Odessa File, which was made into a major motion picture. This organization was and is real and has exerted a profound influence, as I said, in the post-World War II world in no small measure because of its ongoing and connections with elements of Western intelligence, including and especially U.S. intelligence. In a half-hour segment entitled The Priebke Case, about the trial of Erich Priebke, an SS officer charged with participation in the Adriatine Caves massacre, that was a famous incident in World War II in which several hundred Italian hostages were executed in exchange for the killing of some 30-odd German soldiers by Italian partisans in World War II. Priebke was, in fact, the officer who commanded that unit. He has simply said, however, that he was following orders and would have been executed himself if he had failed to follow those orders. One of the things that emerged in connection with the Priebke case, as I discussed in that half-hour segment, available, by the way, from Spitfire, that's a tape duplication service. I'll give you the address, etc. right now. Spitfire, S-P-I-T-F-I-R-E, one word, can be contacted at P.O. Box 1179, P.O. Box 1179, that is in Ben Lomond, California, capital B-E-N, capital L-O-M-O-N-D, and the zip code is 95005. There's also an email address, A-L-C-A-L-A-M-E, one word, A-L-C-A-L-A-M-E, at ix.netcom.com. Once again, the mailing address, Spitfire, P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, 95005. The email address, alcalame@ix.netcom.com. And in the half-hour segment about the Erich Priebke case, again available from Spitfire, I discussed the fact that the Priebke case and the investigation into it revealed that not only had Priebke taken advantage of the rat line, the Vatican and U.S. intelligence-assisted pipeline by which SS officers and Nazi SS men and Nazi war criminals were able to escape Europe and the justice of Nuremberg and to make it to Latin America and elsewhere, many of them under the auspices of and in the employment of Western intelligence, including and especially U.S. intelligence. Indeed, one of the people who was giving information on the Priebke case, a former SS man named Haas, also had worked for U.S. intelligence and was involved with the ODESA, the post-World War II SS underground. Research credit on the following goes to Dave White, our pan-European researcher and translator. This comes from the Corriere della Sera of Tuesday, January 21st of 1997. This is an article entitled Priebke to remain in Fort Boccea. That's B-O-C-C-E-A, and I'm not sure about the pronunciation. A request by lawyers for Erich Priebke to release their client from protective custody has been denied because of the existence of secret Nazi organizations which could help him escape. In the ruling, the judge said it was not possible to name these Nazi organizations because a secret inquiry is still in force. The judges did mention, however, that for 50 years, Nazi war criminals in different parts of the world, particularly South America, have received protection from these Nazi organizations. This is quite true, and perhaps the best known of those organizations is the ODESA, which we're going to talk about in a minute. One of the things that is sort of grotesque and ludicrous to me, though, is that these things are always blamed exclusively on the ODESA or on, quote, secret Nazi organizations, whereas, in fact, first of all, fascism itself was no aberration. It's anti-communist, anti-labor, and in the case of the Nazis, pro-eugenics stance endeared it to many of the most powerful elements in the West. That's why the cream of the Third Reich's national security establishment was incorporated into the Western intelligence system, particularly and including and particularly the U.S. intelligence system. It's also why the Nazis were allowed to stay in power in Germany, albeit underground and in a behind-the-scenes but very profound way. In one sense, and this should be listened to very carefully, I think the Third Reich has gotten a bad rap. Not that they didn't do what they did, but in the sense that it is blamed being viewed as an exclusively German phenomenon, whereas, in fact, the horrors of the Third Reich that engulfed the world in World War II, and are doing so again, stem in considerable measure from very powerful forces in the West, including and especially the United States. So in that sense, the United States, Britain, France, and other countries bear a profound measure of responsibility for what transpired in World War II. It was not exclusively or perhaps even primarily a German phenomenon. It was an international phenomenon. It was in the pre-World War II and World War II periods, and it is today. And talking about these, quote, secret Nazi organizations, one might well include U.S. intelligence and corporate America as one of those, quote, secret, unquote, Nazi organizations. And again, this is not to say I hold a brief for the Third Reich, but rather the lone nut, you know, Hitler did it, aren't those Germans terrible for what they did, covers up the profound international corporate and ideological and eugenics connections of fascism. As I speak on the evening of February 16th, 1997, recent weeks and months have seen considerable coverage of the uncovering of looted Nazi gold in Switzerland and elsewhere. This actually caused a flap which led to the resignation of the Swiss ambassador to the United States. There have been revelations about Nazi gold making their way through Sweden, Portugal, and to Latin America, Argentina in particular. What has not received the attention due it in the American press, but which has been discussed in the British press, is the fact that the aforementioned Odessa, the very powerful and lethal post-World War II SS underground, which has worked very closely with U.S. intelligence and the German intelligence system as well, the Reinhard Gehlen organization about which I've spoken so often, that the Swiss gold and the funds that were looted from Europe and stashed away in secret, in no small measure in Switzerland, went to give rise to the post-World War II Odessa organization, among other things. Research credit on the following, once again, goes to Dave White, our pan-European researcher and translator. Dave gleaned the following article from the London Independent of Saturday, September 7th, 1996, on page 1. This is an article by Daniel Jeffries in New York, and it's headlined, Fourth Reich Plot Revealed, subheaded, Jewish Group Uncovers Proof of Conspiracy by, quote, Odessa-file, unquote, Nazis, in secret papers. And again, before I read this very important article, this is hardly news. Scholars of the Third Reich have known for a long time of the secret funds, Operation Safe Haven, the Odessa, and indeed what I call the Underground Reich. And so this, the notion that this is news is altogether false. It is refreshing to a scholar to see this finally being reported in the newspapers, but this has been known to serious scholars of the Third Reich for a long, long time. The article reads, Secret U.S. documents, and again this is from the London Independent of Saturday, September 7th of 1996, secret U.S. documents uncovered by a Jewish human rights group have proved the existence of a Nazi support group that sought to smuggle people and gold out of Germany in 1945 and worked for the establishment of a Fourth Reich. The group is vividly portrayed in Frederick Forsyth's novel The Odessa File. Mr. Forsyth confirmed yesterday that his novel was based on reports of a meeting which took place in France in August of 1944. This meeting is detailed in U.S. documents seen by the Independent, which were collected by a top-secret intelligence operation called Project Safe Haven at the end of the war. Quote, the Odessa existed, and they removed billions of dollars in looted Jewish assets from Germany, unquote, says Ellen Steinberg, E-L-A-N, capital S-T-E-I-N-B-E-R-G, executive director of the World Jewish Congress. Their plan was to reestablish the Nazi Party from safe havens outside Germany, and many of the assets they smuggled out must still exist, unquote. The World Jewish Congress is seeking to recover Jewish assets which were stolen by the Nazis. The Odessa document is an American intelligence report stamped, quote, secret, unquote, and written in November of 1944. It is based on the work of a French intelligence agent deployed by the Deuxième Bureau, which penetrated Nazi organizations in Paris during the German occupation. The agent observed an August 1944 meeting of German industrialists held in Strasbourg. It was presided over by SS Obergruppenführer Dr. Schied, S-C-H-I-E-D, managing director of the Hesse Company before the war. That's capital H-E-S-H-E. Quote, their plan was to smuggle gold, patents, and art out of Germany along with top industrialists, unquote, says Steinberg. Meanwhile, the Nazi Party would reestablish itself in Germany as an underground movement, unquote. The document was discovered in July when Steinberg gained access to recently declassified papers from the National Archive in Washington. Steinberg has authenticated the report and linked it to others which show that the German Reichsbank, precursor to the Bundesbank, was involved in the Odessa plot. Interrupting, we've taken a look in numerous archive shows, including RFA 37 and also the Seeds of Nuremberg, but Why Johnny Can't Identify Il Duce, at the secret underground Nazi party in Germany, which wields a consummate influence. It's existed from the time of World War II, and it exists now. Continuing. According to a secret U.S. State Department telegram dated December 4, 1945, the Reichsbank maintained a depot of gold at the Swiss National Bank throughout the war. By 1945, it had accumulated bullion worth $123 million, which was earmarked for Odessa operations. The Strasbourg meeting laid out a comprehensive plan for resurrecting the Reich. Executives from Volkswagen, Krupp Steel, Brown Boveri, Messerschmitt, Zeiss, and Leica were ordered to establish operations overseas and finance the Nazi Party from abroad. The intelligence report quotes SS Obergruppenführer Schied as he spelt out the post-war strategy. Quote, "From now on, German industry must realize that the war cannot be won and that it must make steps in preparation for a post-war commercial campaign," unquote, he said. In the future, existing financial reserves in foreign countries must be placed at the disposal of the party so that a strong German empire can be created after the defeat," unquote. The Odessa document and others in possession of the World Jewish Congress may have adverse implications for the modern descendants of leading German corporations. Quote, "We now have sufficient evidence for an indictment," unquote, said Ilan Steinberg yesterday. Again quoting, "We will be conducting further investigations which will include all the companies named in the Odessa documents, and we will seek reparations where appropriate," unquote. The Odessa document came to light after the World Jewish Congress failed to persuade Switzerland to voluntarily open secret Nazi bank accounts in May of this year. Quote, "The documents are evidence of the biggest robbery in the history of mankind," says Steinberg, who has now forced the Swiss government to begin a full inquiry. The Independent reported yesterday that Adolf Hitler had been reported to have held numbered accounts at the Union Bank of Switzerland. UBS yesterday issued a statement denying that it was still handling funds deposited by Nazis during the war. Robert Vogler, the bank's chief spokesman in Zurich, could not say whether such an account had ever existed, but he said that all funds belonging to Germans were frozen after the war, their owners vetted, and those traced to known Nazis handed over to the Allies. Well, again, the complicity of major German corporations, which in turn were inextricably linked through cartel agreements with their American counterparts, is one of the factors that led to the resurrection of Nazism and fascism at the end of World War II. And again, I would take the notion that there will be prosecutions of German corporations for their participation in the Odessa plot with a generous, generous dose of salt. One of the interesting things about the Odessa is that not only did it exist and collaborate with U.S. intelligence, but there is a successor organization of the Odessa, according to some accounts, and that it continues to finance Nazi activities, including so-called neo-Nazi activities around the world. For connections between the Odessa and its related organizations and contemporary Nazis, I don't like the term neo-Nazis. They're not neo, they're Nazis. We're going to turn to a book that we've used before on this program. It's entitled The New Reich, subtitled Violent Extremism in Unified Germany and Beyond. The book was authored by German journalist Michael Schmidt, S-C-H-M-I-D-T, published in hardcover by Pantheon Books and copyrighted 1993. And one of the indications that, in fact, not only did the Odessa survive and produce a successor organization, but that that organization continues to fund contemporary German Nazi activities around the world, came in an interview with a German so-called neo-Nazi leader named Michael Kuhnen. That's K-U-U-M-L-A-U-T-H-N-E-N. Schmidt interviewed him, and Kuhnen also talked about the various funding sources for contemporary German Nazi activities. And again, I don't like the term neo-Nazi. Kuhnen says, as reported by Schmidt, funds also flow in from the NSDAPAO in the United States and from other groups, but Kuhnen explains, quote, "They only give when they're convinced their money will be utilized effectively," unquote. "What sort of groups are they?" I ask. "I can't tell you." "Odessa? South America?" I asked, Kuhnen almost matter-of-factly. After the Second World War, many SS men escaped arrest and trial with the support of the Vatican and the International Red Cross, as well as the American Military Secret Service, the CIC, or Counterintelligence Corps. Few left without the necessary traveling money. The escape routes went through Austria, Italy, and Switzerland to South America and the Middle East, but also to Spain and Scandinavia. Because these routes were created with the help of high officials in the Catholic Church, the war criminals themselves called it the Vatican Line, unquote. The American espionage community, which took advantage of the SS and Gestapo officers' useful knowledge while protecting them from arrest, had another name for it, the Rat Line, unquote. For their own part, the SS men who had thus achieved security founded a relief agency variously called Spider or Odessa. That's Organisation der ehemaligen SS Angehörigen, or Organization of Former SS Members, and by the way, my German pronunciation is probably incorrect, which became widely known through Frederick Forsyth's novel The Odessa File. Spider, as Graham Atkinson had explained to me, also developed an organization within Germany, the HIAG, and I'm not going to attempt the German, the Mutual Aid Society, a group we will come to later. In any case, rumors and myths surround this secret society, though most neo-Nazis simply deny its existence. Basically, HIAG is the Waffen-SS branch of the Odessa, to make a long story short. Continuing. Kunin just shakes his head. "I can't really tell you," he says, almost apologetic. But after a short pause, he continues, "Odessa doesn't exist anymore, but I decide to try to help him. But of course, there's still money there," unquote. But we don't have much influence on its distribution. There are certainly people around who came out of precisely those ranks. But even if we do get money from them, it's only for specific isolated actions, and they expect results. What kind of money? For example, for large-scale poster and pamphlet distribution, you could say around 10 to 15,000 marks. It's never more than 40,000 marks. And for weapons? Kunin turns to look at me. He has just confirmed the existence of a successor to the legendary Odessa, and that it occasionally funds the neo-Nazis. Obviously, drug dealing and weapons purchases conform to the picture of his movement that he would like to present. Changing the subject somewhat, he tells me that my work is important. And in addition to the information provided by Michael Kunin, later on in The New Reich, Violent Extremism in Unified Germany and Beyond, we see further indications of ongoing connections between the old guard of the SS and the Odessa and contemporary German Nazis, called by most neo-Nazis. Still later, in discussing the political pedigree of Ewald Altans, that's E-W-A-L-D, last name A-L-T-H-A-N-S, one of the most prominent of the German contemporary Nazi leaders, Michael Schmidt writes as follows. By the time he was a teenager, Bela Ewald Altans was a member of Kunin's FAP. At the age of 13, he had been handpicked by and systematically prepared for a leadership role by old ex-Nazis and Nazi sympathizers. One of his mentors was Princess Helena von Isenburg, I-S-E-N-B-U-R-G, who in the 1950s, through the Odessa Advanced Organization Stille Hilfe, or Silent Aid, had helped Nazi war criminals escape justice, providing them with money and petitions to such personages as Pope Pius XII. The HNG later took over Stille Hilfe's operations. Christa Goert, G-O-E-R-T-H, the HNG's managing director, is also here today. I had met her at my first talk with Michael Kunin. Altans received additional support from Otto Ernst Rehmer, Hitler's bodyguard, who was also in the audience today. Systematically trained in Germany, Altans was also sent abroad. He speaks fluent English, passable French and Italian, and enough Spanish not to need an interpreter at CEDADE's meetings in Madrid. That's a Spanish fascist organization. I would also note, interrupting, that Otto Ernst Rehmer was the SS officer who supervised the execution of the July 20th, 1944 conspirators against Adolf Hitler and was widely viewed as the unofficial spokesman for the Odessa in Germany. By the way, Ewald Altans, among other places, traveled to the United States, and his Nazi organizations were taking paramilitary training with American fascist organizations, including some fascist elements within the militias, in particular the Michigan militia, with which Nichols and McVeigh were reported to have connections. He was also revealed later, that is, Ewald Altans, to be an agent for the Verfassungsschutz, a domestic German intelligence agency. Continuing with Michael Schmidt's account, in his mid-20s, Altans corresponds closely to the Aryan ideal. He is tall and blonde with gray-blue eyes and well-proportioned features. He is also homosexual, which in the Third Reich might have put him in a concentration camp, but he nevertheless considers Hitler, quote, the most perfect man of all time, unquote. Altans is talented both as a speaker and as an organizer. He consistently demonstrates his organizational skills in his congresses featuring David Irving and other revisionists. In private life, he claims to be a journalist and runs a firm called AVO, Altans Verkauf und, I'm not even going to attempt this, the Altans Sales and Publicity Company. In the spring of 1992, he shows exactly how he makes enough money to finance an office in Munich complete with fax, portable phone, and computer system. He places an ad for spectacular action photos, unquote, in various newspapers. For a price of $5,000, he will provide the buyer with, quote, action shots, unquote, of paramilitary neo-Nazis quenching their thirst for battle in Croatia, as well as in Iraq during the Gulf War, unquote. And in past broadcasts, we have discussed the German Nazi mercenaries who fought with Iraq against the coalition forces, including American forces, in the Persian Gulf War. As mentioned in the Michael Schmidt text, and also in some of my observations in this program, one of the interesting things about the Odessa is not only that it existed, and has existed from the time of the Second World War, but that it works closely with, has worked closely with Western intelligence, and indeed much of its influence derives from its associations with Western intelligence, and in particular, U.S. intelligence. And please note the influence of the Odessa and successor and related organizations on contemporary Nazi activities, not only in Germany, but around the world. What we're going to look at next concerns a Dutch Waffen-SS veteran and Nazi activist named Gerrit, G-E-R-R-I-T, E-T, Volsink, W-O-L-S-I-N-K. And Volsink is an individual with more connections than a switchboard, including the Odessa and contemporary Nazi organizations around the world. And as we will note, much of the influence he's been able to wield has derived from his connections to and work for Western intelligence, including U.S. intelligence. Continuing, we read of Volsink, Michael Schmidt writes in the New Reich, at 16, he falsified his age and volunteered for the Wehrmacht, then the SS and the Reich Central Security Office. He was also a member of the Brandenburg Division, a collection of zealots and violent thugs originally transferred for disciplinary reasons. The Brandenburgers were mostly sent on suicide missions, and primarily in the east to fight partisans, which generally involved horrible atrocities. Entire villages were, quote, eradicated, unquote. During the Ardennes offensive, the Battle of the Bulge, the Brandenburgers were sent behind enemy lines in enemy uniforms to set up ambushes. On the command of SS section leader Joseph Sepp Dietrich, they summarily executed over 100 American prisoners of war near Malmedy on December 17, 1944. Volsink's final rank was SS Hauptsturmführer, the equivalent of captain. He looks just as I remembered him from our first meeting, with a musketeer-style beard, jug-handle ears, and piercing eyes. Although he claims to have severe stomach problems, he has a cigarette in the end of his long holder and is savoring the smoke as I ask him, so then you were on missions with the Brandenburgers, undercover sometimes in enemy uniform as special commandos. Volsink nods. Yes, for the most part, unquote. Holmann and Kunin look at him admiringly, and I decide to ask if he was one of the SS killers. Did you also carry out liquidations, unquote? He leans his head back. Talking about that is still a complicated matter since they're seen as war crimes, unquote. Volsink now is hesitant. I don't want to make excuses, but his cigarette glows even though he hasn't taken a drag. He murmurs to himself and turns to the side. He has always looked me straight in the eyes, but now he's looking away, looking around the room. Then, suddenly, his gaze is on me again. If I did it, he says cautiously, then it was only as a mop-up action to protect the lives of German soldiers, unquote. He pauses very briefly, then says, in order to continue the war, unquote. Volsink wasn't convicted of war crimes, as he himself has written. Thanks to a lack of evidence, a false name and false date of birth, unquote. In 1946, a second court sentenced him to 8 years for his membership in the Brandenburgers, but a year later he was set free, quote, on the condition that I participate in the Cold War under Allied command, unquote. Because of his knowledge gained as a sabotage and terror specialist with the Brandenburgers, again quoting, I received the approval of my highest post-war commanding officer, Section Leader Dietrich, for this activity, unquote. That means going to work for Western intelligence. For his new Allied employers, Volsink took part in, quote, various actions in the Soviet sphere modeled after the Brandenburgers, unquote. Volsink was also secretly active in the werewolf movement, Hitler loyalists who were supposed to carry out terror and sabotage against the, quote, occupiers, unquote, after the war. This was largely a failure, but the construction of the Odessa network, camouflaged as the Netherlands HIAG, progressed with remarkable success. Officially, Volsink worked in the hotel business. On the side, he built up the Dutch division of the Viking Youth and was active in the Northern League, an international neo-Nazi organization. Otherwise, he restrained himself. Later, he found, quote, the Negro and Arab problem too racially threatening, unquote, and joined the NVU, the Nederlandse Volksunie, but left it again in 1986. Since 1985, he has been affiliated with the ANS Nederlanda. The number on Volsink's NSDAPAO membership card is 688463, And today he is an international coordinator for the organization with contacts in South Africa, Australia, and the United States. His most important contact in the United States is James K. Warner of Louisiana, a KKK member. In 1971, Warner founded an organization called the New Christian Crusade Church, or NCCC. This organization soon developed a subsidiary, the Militant Christian Defense League, or CDL. Both organizations are part of the Identity Movement. The CDL has contacts with, among others, neo-Nazi and former KKK Grand Wizard David Duke, whose recent unsuccessful gubernatorial campaign in Louisiana nevertheless won him 44% of the vote in the primary and 39% in the general election. Volsink is also an honorary member of the strictly clandestine, militantly terrorist British National Social Movement, or BNSM. International activities such as the task of assembling mercenaries for Iraq are skillfully coordinated by Volsink. He sees himself as part of the underground, which is why he was reluctant to talk, even with Kunin's recommendation. He is not informative, and it seems to me that I had better be satisfied simply to have gotten him in front of the camera. Still, his activities during the Cold War interest me. After the war, you worked for the Allies, I say, but weren't they really the enemy, unquote? Volsink looks at me with big, watery blue eyes. His glasses make them seem even bigger. Quote, "My precise choice was either to be dead or to be free and working in approximately the same direction," unquote. "Against communism," I cut in. Volsink shakes his head. That much was obvious. "And what have you done as a 21 or 22-year-old? It meant a better life," says Volsink, "and then I could also get back to my Nazi work at once," unquote. As it was for Klaus Barbie, the Butcher of Lyon, and other top Gestapo and SS officers, the Cold War was a blessing for Volsink, a gentleman's agreement in which it was tacitly understood that he would continue his Nazi activities. This last sentence again. As it was for Klaus Barbie, the Butcher of Lyon, and other top Gestapo and SS officers, the Cold War was a blessing for Volsink, a gentleman's agreement in which it was tacitly understood that he would continue his Nazi activities. "I always did my part, and back then I didn't have much reason not to either," unquote. Volsink smiles smugly. The memory of his cooperation with the, quote, enemy, unquote, still amuses him today. I ask what kind of work he did, but Volsink refuses. "I can't talk about that. You'll have to take my word for it. It just wouldn't do," unquote. "So you still can't even talk about these missions, not even today," unquote? Volsink closes his eyes briefly. Then he shakes his head. "No, it wouldn't do." "Why not?" "Surely you understand that it's still going on," unquote. So note that basically his work for Western Intelligence was a cover. Basically, it was there was an implicit understanding that it would serve as a cover for his ongoing Nazi activities. Note his many connections to contemporary Nazi and fascist organizations and elements around the world, including elements in the U.S. associated with David Duke. One of the former members of the SS and an individual who has worked very closely with Western intelligence and an individual who wields a profound influence in post-World War II Italy is former SS officer and Italian fascist Licio Gelli, head of the infamous P2 Lodge, and organizations with, again, more connections than a switchboard, including many connections to powerful U.S. interests, including U.S. intelligence and numerous U.S. presidents, including and especially Ronald Reagan. One of the things I noted in my half-hour segment about the Priebke case, that it's ironic that the Italians are going to try a former SS man for killing Italians when Licio Gelli has wielded a pivotal influence in post-World War II Italy. And Gelli was in the SS and has been responsible for the deaths of many Italians. I suspected there might very well be a link somewhere between the milieu of Licio Gelli and the milieu of Erich Priebke, the direct link, that is, and indeed there was such a link. The final item in tonight's broadcast, or today's broadcast, supplied to us by Dave White, comes from Panorama, the Italian news magazine of August 15, 1996. On page 57, we find the following. Priebke's lawyer during the extradition proceedings between Argentina and Italy was Alfredo Biondi, B-I-O-N-D-I, a friend of Licio Gelli. So, in fact, there was such a link. That concludes this segment. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.